Well, it is Tuesday, and each and every Tuesday, hour two here on the Leslie Marshall Show, we're going to be adding a new segment, effective immediately. Actually, we decided to start it tonight. My buddy, talk host himself extraordinaire, sits in for me here, hosts his own talk show, not one, but two, and on radio and TV. We're going to co-host a segment every Tuesday here on hour two on the Leslie Marshall Show called The Inside Scoop. Mark Levine, if you don't know him, you should. Not only a friend of mine personally and professionally, a friend of liberals, a friend of the gay community, a friend of the legal community, but listen to his background. A former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. As I said, he's a host of his own shows, the Washington-based radio television talk show The Inside Scoop and the Raucous Caucus on Pacifica Radio WPFW 89.3 FM Inside the Beltway. He also frequently appears on TV, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, CNBC, and he's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host on the left, and he and I tangoed once on The O'Reilly Factor. More than a pleasure to have my co-host in this hour of The Inside Scoop, our new Hour 2 Tuesday edition to the show, Mark Levine. Hey, sweetie, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, and thank you so much for beginning this segment. I'm really looking forward to giving you and your listeners the inside scoop, but once a week right here. I'm excited to be here. I'm just disappointed that it has to be on tonight's topic because I'm profoundly disappointed with the report did today, but I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk with you and your audience about it.
You know, Mark, I'm glad that you said that because when the Supreme Court, and I think when a lot of Americans hear, the Supreme Court struck down a section of the Voting Rights Act, blah, 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 I don't think a lot of Americans understand what that meant. I don't think the surprise is not, the surprise to me is in the ruling. When I hear about the breakdown of the ruling, that's not a surprise. But let's talk about first and foremost what that section of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court struck down, what it is, and what that means to Americans.
Sure.
and to those in various states.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, people need to understand the historic significance of the Voting Rights Act. I mean, here it was 100 years after the end of the Civil War in 1965 when Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act. I would argue that that act, that along with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, those acts together combined destroyed Jim Crow in America. We had 100 years of Jim Crow segregation, unfair treatment of blacks, well after the Civil War. For 100 years, blacks were denied the right to vote. They were denied the right to equal housing and equal opportunities to even attend a restaurant. I mean, in my hometown in Nashville, Tennessee, I still see the theater where blacks were forced to sit in the balcony. The Voting Rights Act of 1964 dealt with private discrimination. It's what allowed blacks to go equally into restaurants and theaters and hotels, things of that. But I would argue equally important with that was the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Because in a democracy, you have no power over your government unless you have the right to vote. That is the only check
Absolutely.
We have on tyranny is the right to vote. I mean, I know that Second Amendment enthusiasts argue their check on tyranny is taking the government down through guns. To me, that's not what America is all about. It's all about taking the government down through voting. And what the Voting Rights Act of 1965 did is it looked at states and localities all across the nation. It wasn't just the nine southern states. It included Manhattan. It included places in Michigan and Utah, places wherever they had voting tests. Like literacy tests, things like poll taxes later declared unconstitutional in a separate amendment to the Constitution, things like asking how many jelly beans are in a jar, which the black folks had to do, what white folks didn't have to do, all these little tests that effectively disenfranchised blacks in 1960 were voting 1, 2, 3, maybe 5% in these jurisdictions, and nowhere near the rights that the white were. So what the Voting Rights Act did is it has two provisions, two primary provisions. Section 2 allows you to sue after the fact. It says if you've been denied the right to vote, then you can sue and say it was an unfair election, and the state says, I'm really sorry, I won't do it again. But that doesn't let you change an election. If they have a literacy test, you say that was fair, unfair, the court wags its fingers at that jurisdiction, and then the next day they don't give you a literacy test, the next election they ask you how many jelly beans are in a jar. the thing that really stopped racist discrimination in voting was Section 5 of the Civil Rights Act. And Section 5 said that in these states, they had these unlawful voting procedures and tests that you had to get pre-clearance from the U.S. Justice Department if you wanted to impose a new test that radically restricted voting on the basis of race. And the Justice Department, for example, just last year, invalidated Texas provisions, South Carolina provisions relating to voter ID laws. I remember 4 years ago, Georgia wanted to give photo IDs to all its people living in primarily white counties. But if you lived in Atlanta, the capital of Georgia and by far the largest city, guess what? You couldn't get a photo ID. You had to drive up and get to a white county to get the photo ID. And the Justice Department struck that down, saying, you know what? If whites can get photo IDs in order to vote, then blacks should be able to get the same photo IDs. This happens year after year after year. It happened just recently in the elections in 2012. Some 14 states tried to disenfranchise black people. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act stopped it. And now, well, I'm afraid it'll be a lot easier to disenfranchise on the basis of race. It's a very sad day for America.
Okay. Now, so people understand this section that was struck down actually weakens the power, in a sense, that the federal government has used for nearly 50 years in order to block discriminatory voting laws. So the Supreme Court is clearly taking power away from, you know, from my view, our federal government to protect those of color. And this is not just, is this just about blacks or is it about people of all colors? Would this, you know, like, Latinos, Native Americans, et cetera?
It's definitely larger than just African Americans. In Texas, a lot of the anti-voting laws were against Latinos. For example, they'd require English-only statutes so that Latinos couldn't read the ballot and therefore couldn't vote. And that's one of the things that was struck down in Texas. This is something that applies anytime any state wants to have a voting procedure that effectively discriminates on the basis of race, national origin. So it's not just African Americans, it's broader than that. It's also right, Leslie, that it's about federal power because only the federal government can trump the state government. And that's why we have the Voting Rights Act. I mean, this is something where states are using, they used to use things called all white primaries, in fact, to make sure that only whites could vote in the primary, and therefore, the two candidates that remained would both be, you know, appealing to the racist vote. So this is something that where the federal government was preventing states from doing this, and now the states are free, including, by the way, Shelby County, Alabama. Here's the thing I find most annoying about all of this, is that in the law it says if you haven't discriminated in 10 years, I think it wouldn't be that hard in 2013 to find places that haven't discriminated in 10 years. It said if you had discriminated in 10 years, guess what? You're off the list. Because in fact, what the Supreme Court did is it said you can still obtain preclearance, but we're going to strike the list clean. We're going to claim that all counties, no matter how racist, are suddenly no longer racist. And Shelby County, Alabama had discriminated unlawfully just 3 or 5 years back, definitely within the 10 years period. And so they were still on the list and they wanted to disenfranchise the blacks of their district. And the Supreme Court says, you know what? Just because you were racist 5 years ago doesn't mean that you're not racist now. So this provision actually allows people off the list for a simple reason. Just don't be racist for 10 years. Shelby County, Alabama couldn't meet that test, and that's why they had to bring it to the United States Supreme Court to begin with.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. I have so many questions on this because I was shocked by this ruling. Some people were not surprised. I want to find out about my co-host's opinion of that. Mark Levine is my co-host in this hour. This is the Inside Scoop this hour on the Leslie Marshall Show every Tuesday, hour two. Mark Levine is my co-host. Please pick up the phone and join us in this hour. You have questions about this ruling, comments, opinions, and concerns, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. You can tweet us there. And by the way, you can also follow Mark, my co-host in this hour, on Twitter, at Mark Levine Talk. That's M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E Talk. Also, check out his website during the break, marklevinetalk.com. Mark and I will share tweets and your phone calls and more of our comments. Mark certainly is much more of an expert than I could ever claim to be on this. With his legal background, we'll be back to him, my co-host, and you with this weekly edition of the Inside Scoop here on the Leslie Marshall Show. Don't go away. Hey there, America. Leslie Marshall here with my co-host in this hour, every Tuesday, hour two of the Inside Scoop. Mark Levine is my co-host. Mark, thank you for holding. Welcome back. We are talking in this hour, and you know this is the shortest segment in the hour, about the Supreme Court striking down the section of the Voting Rights Act, and we're talking about Section 4. And the ruling was 5-4. Did this fall mainly along party lines? It seems to me it did when I see the names listed. And obviously, what they stated is that Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional. Let's get to that in a minute, but let's talk about the 5-4 ruling and the breakdown of the justices and their decisions on this.
Well, it's not entirely along partisan lines. The five justices appointed by Republican presidents voted against it. It was unconstitutional. The four justices appointed by Democratic presidents decided to uphold what Congress did. And let's all remember that in 2006, Congress reauthorized this act. The vote was 98-0 in the Senate, including, by the way, the senators from Alabama themselves felt that their state needed a special look over to make sure they weren't being racist. So basically, the court is saying, screw you, Congress. We don't care how many hearings, how many tens of thousands of pages of evidence you had, we just decide to overrule you and overrule the American people.
Would this have come up, in your opinion, Mark, legal opinion, if we didn't have a black president?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Would this have come up if in the last two elections, presidential elections, the strength of minorities, of non-whites, African-Americans, Latinos especially, have shown their power, A, and B, to be so largely Democratic?
Well, the court did point that out. The court specifically said that in the southern states, that in many of them, that the votes of blacks, the percentage turnout exceeded the votes of whites. But the Voting Rights Act is not designed to increase black turnout, per se. It's designed to prevent discriminatory tests in voting, things like literacy tests, or those were, I guess, more the first generation, what Justice Ginsburg calls in her dissent, second-generation barriers, things like racial gerrymandering, which still exists today, where you design the districts so as to dilute black voting. Those things still exist and still have been prohibited really every day up until this ruling.
Do voters in these states, let's use literacy as an example, okay? How much leeway does somebody have? Because literacy is obviously not something, or illiteracy, is not just something that affects people of color. You know, certainly poverty plays into that. There is a correlation between illiteracy and poverty. But there are certainly poor whites in this country and in some of those states that are, covered. Alabama is an example, discussed in this decision with the ruling on Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court. So if somebody is illiterate, regardless of their color, do they have any right within the state to fight and bring this back to the court, but from a voter's perspective within that state since this ruling, or are they completely shut down?
Well, to be fair, literacy tests are more of what Justice Ginsburg called first-generation barriers to ballot access. You don't see those too much anymore, although you're definitely
well,
right.
Okay, how about having to show an ID? How about having to show a certain type of ID if you're elderly? Let's look at the state of Louisiana. How many
right.
people lost everything in Katrina or in Oklahoma?
Right.
Or, you know, we have a lot of, with the global warming, climate change, a lot of natural disasters going on. So what if somebody doesn't have identification because they lost it, or they're a veteran, perhaps they have some kind of a mental disability or deficiency, or they're homeless?
Well, I think photo ID is actually the perfect example of the second-generation barriers, the kinds that exist today. And, of course, they apply not just to African-Americans who are less likely to have photo ID, but also, you're absolutely right, against the homeless, against the poor, against the very elderly, some of which who were born in a time when birth certificates weren't kept so scrupulously. And actually, a lot of young people who leave town and go to college, don't necessarily have driver's license in the state in which they're registered. They might be registered in their home state, but they go to a college in another state. So it definitely affects voters outside of just African-Americans. But as far as I'm concerned, no voter should be discriminated against. Every voter should have an equal right to vote. And that's part of what the Voting Rights Act allows.
Let's take a call and let's go to Kentucky with Jacqueline. Jacqueline, thank you for calling. Question or comment for Mark Levine, my co-host, or myself?
Hi. Yes, I was calling because obviously our Congress in 2006 voted overwhelmingly in support of this law for the next 25 years. And our Congress doesn't really agree that the grass is green. So I'm wondering if, you know, the justices should not have taken a hint and practiced a little bit of judicial restraint here, considering that these people are our direct representatives.
Well, Jacqueline's right. That's fundamentally anti-democratic what the Supreme Court did today. As I said, it was unanimous in the Senate. It was overwhelming in the House. And in the Senate, even Alabama's two senators voted for it. So this is the court saying, Congress, you don't know what you're doing. We're going to substitute our judgment for that of the American people. And it seems to me when something as fundamental as voting rights is concerned, that Supreme Court should just stay out of it. Congress is actually doing a decent job. Let them do their job.
Jacqueline, anything else, sweetie?
That's it.
All right. Thank you. Very good question. Very good point. Okay, good. I have enough time to ask one more question in this segment. Mark, well, first of all, I want to know, were you surprised by this ruling?
Unfortunately, no. There have been indications of this. There was a prior ruling in 2009 where the justices seemed to indicate they were on the verge of this. You know, you could argue, as the justices did, that Congress needed to readjust its formulas to make sure that the current group of preclearance was still being racist. I think the 10-year provision was a pretty good provision to say, hey, if you're no longer racist, you get out. To me, 10 years seemed rough justice. You know, maybe it should have been 8 or 12, but that already existed. And at the end of the day, it's not the court's right to make laws. They can only declare laws unconstitutional. I think they went way too far here.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue with your calls at 888-653-7543, 888-653-7543. Questions, opinions, comments, and concerns regarding the Supreme Court decisions today regarding the Voting Rights Act, what that means. My co-host on the Inside Scoop this hour here every Tuesday, hour two on the Leslie Marshall Show, is Mark Levine. Mark and I are going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back to you. Like I said, give us a call, 888-653-7543. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Follow Mark at Mark Levine. We will share your tweets as well coming up in the next second half of this hour two of the Inside Scoop, every Tuesday, hour two here on the show. I'm Leslie Marshall. My co-host is Mark Levine. We're going to take a break right after this, and we'll come back to you, your calls, your tweets, and all that and more, talking about the Voting Rights Act and specifically the Supreme Court's decision and what that means for voters going forward. From 2013 and beyond. We'll be back. Don't go away.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings.
You know, my
what keeps the planet
my 5 and 6 year old like this song. Do you know what they say? They say if kids like a song, it'll be a hit. Well, it's already a hit, though, right? Anyway, Leslie Marshall with my co-host Mark Levine here on the Inside Scoop, which is going to be here every Tuesday, hour two on the Leslie Marshall Show. Join us in this hour. We're talking about the Voting Rights Act, and we're talking specifically the Supreme Court of the United States decision to shoot down congressional power, federal power, when it comes to discrimination, allowing states to make decisions with regard to voting, such as requiring a photo ID. In this hour, join us at 888-653-7543. And like I say, you can tweet us as well. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Follow my co-host Mark Levine at Mark Levine. Mark, I want to know, you said, you know, you weren't surprised by this. Let's go back to not just the power of the state. Let's go back to that photo ID. Let me just throw out an example that actually happened. I witnessed it. I live in Los Angeles, California, as you know. And in my area where I vote, it's the same where I used to vote when I lived in my old house, because I don't live in the same neighborhood, but I live up the street. Okay? So I sold, sold the townhouse and moved up the street and built a non-townhouse, single-family detached house. And when I went to vote, there was a guy named Jim. And everybody kind of knows Jim. He drives a broken vehicle. He is a veteran. He's on meds. And when he goes off at meds, he can be crazy. He sat on his roof and was shooting at people. Fortunately, he's a big fan of mine and a Democrat. But he was going to vote, and he didn't have any identification showing his name and address because he lives with his mom and because he doesn't work. He is a veteran. You know, he's disabled. And he had on his uniform and all the medals that he had won from Vietnam. And there were people crying and other veterans that came forward. And one of the guys who was a volunteer was an older man wearing his uniform from like World War II or something.
Wow.
And he came forward and he's like, you know, you let this man, everybody was like, you let this man vote. And he went, he voted. I was crying. I was like caught up in the emotion of it, everything. And I was just like, in certain states where they will buy this, first of all, these certain states will be allowed, based on this ruling today, to say you have to provide a photo ID and it has to be one of these, like a passport, a driver's license, et cetera. Is that correct?
Certainly. And one of the things about that is I've heard people say, well, what's the big deal? I got a driver's license. Why can't everyone get a driver's license? Democrats have offered repeatedly to simply allow everyone to get a photo ID, right? If the issue was, for example, fraud in voting, which there's been like 10 cases of fraud over the last 200 years, so there's virtually no case of fraud in voting because to influence the voting one vote, which rarely affects an election, you risk going to jail for 5 years. Very few people are willing to take that risk. But if that's your concern, if voter ID is fraud is concerned, we Democrats said, okay, anyone that goes into a voting booth, here's what you do. You take their picture. It's easy to do with digital cameras. Right now, you ask them to sign under penalty of perjury. They are who they say they are. You let them vote, and then if you find out that they're lying, you put them in jail for 5 years. It's a foolproof system. Republicans said, no. We're not going to allow everyone who walks into a voting booth to get a photo ID. We want to make it hard for you to get a photo ID. And that's why, as I said, in the state of Georgia a few years back, but not that long ago, it was about 5 years back, they said, we're going to provide places where you can get these photo IDs. We're going to have them in many, many counties throughout Georgia. We're not going to have them, though, anywhere on the south side of Atlanta, where the vast majority of Atlanta's black population lives. They didn't give a reason. They're just not going to provide blacks the same opportunity they can provide to whites to get this photo ID. So even if you think there's no problem with photo IDs, let's be very clear. People don't have equal access to photo IDs. If you don't have a car, if you're poor, actually if you're fairly elderly, or maybe you're a student who's voting out of state, it's a lot harder to get a photo ID than for those of us that can just go down to the DMV and get one.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right, Leslie. That veteran would have significant trouble voting in many states.
Okay, so let's take the case of an African-American living in the south of Atlanta, south side of Atlanta, which I've been to,
right.
I agree. And they are required to have a vote, let's say a driver's license to vote, okay,
right.
Or a photo ID. And they can prove to a court there is none within so many miles radius, no way for them to get there. Say they're handicapped, they're elderly, they don't drive, there's no public transportation that goes to that. And it can be proven in a court of law that in the state, since the ruling, that in the white neighborhoods, this is how many they have in a 10-mile radius, in the black neighborhood, there's zero in this, you know, 10-mile radius, or there's one, you know, but it's, or, you know, 30 miles away, whatever. Do these people have a legal leg to stand on? Can they sue now that the Supreme Court has made this decision based on the requirements of their state, if they can prove, you know, that there is not access, that
well,
they are
they
being discriminated
do.
Against?
Here's what they can do. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act remains. Section 2 allows somebody after an election to go and get a lawyer and hire one and prove that you were discriminated against, at which point after the election is not invalidated, and then the courts say, tisk, you shouldn't have done this. Of course, the election is held, and frankly, a lot of people, after they've already been denied the right to vote, particularly if they're poor, can't afford a lawyer, can't afford to go through all of the litigation to do that, and then at the end of the day, they say, okay, and they open one more voting office. That may be insufficient, but you'll be able to challenge that until the next election. The beauty of what Section 4 and Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act did, Section 5 required preclearance. Section 4 decided that these counties and states that discriminated would have to get the preclearance. What it did is it said, you know what, if you want to change the voting rights laws in ways that significantly harm a specific race, you've got to get preclearance from the Justice Department. And a lot of times, you know, Justice Department gives clearance. It doesn't look like this harms anyone. But when you say, sorry, the 95% of the whites in Georgia can get access to a photo ID, but only 35% of the blacks can have easy access to a voter ID. Well, the Justice Department actually struck down that provision and said, Georgia, you're going to have to do better. You can't do this. And so Georgia had to have a fair election afterwards. But the Section 2 after the fact, really it's almost never used because very few people, you can't invalidate the election, so all you can really do is say I was discriminated against and you get rid of the law and then they pass some new law. They could do that every election. They could do it every single election. They could pass a new law that you strike down after the election, and frankly, then Georgia would never have let any blacks vote according to the ruling today.
Well, of course, people are going to say, and like you said, there's no evidence, you know, of fraud. It's like, where are these cases? Where are these people they've arrested and they have the right to? It hasn't happened. Mark, who do you think in these states they're trying to prevent from voting? Minorities because they vote Democratic, illegals
right.
in certain states like Arizona for fear an illegal would vote, which I know most illegals would not vote because they'd be so damn afraid of getting caught. The reason I say that is I can show you where you can get a driver's license and a Social Security card for about $25 in Los Angeles. And you know, so when somebody says you need a driver's license, you know, nowadays, especially with computers and Kinko's, come on. And you don't have to go to MIT to have a forged document that some, no offense, but, you know, 85-year-old volunteer with glasses is going to know the difference between, quite frankly.
The reason why undocumented immigrants do not commit voter fraud is because it's simply a cost-benefit analysis. There is a benefit to, like you say, Leslie, getting a fake driver's license, Social Security card, because you get to work in this country. You get to live in America. You get to raise your kids. You get to participate in the American dream. That's a huge benefit. And the cost, if they find out, yeah, they'll probably fire you. But voting, the benefit is very small. Maybe you can influence the election by one vote. And the cost, 5 years in prison, and then deportation is prohibitive. So you just have to do a simple cost-benefit analysis to see why voting fraud doesn't make sense for anyone except for maybe the mentally ill. And frankly, about all the cases we have, and there's only about 10 in the last 200 years, involve someone, frankly, who's mentally ill. Because no sane person would ever try to commit voting fraud.
Well, the other thing is how many illegal immigrants, if they can speak English, can read and write it. And I say that because I can speak some I speak really bad grammar and accent Spanish, but I can get by, you know, when I'm in Spain or in Mexico. Very tiny bit of French, very tiny bit of Italian, understand some of it, can read some of it. But heck, if I had to write in any language other than English, that's definitely where you'd stump me. So, you know, I would imagine that would be a language barrier for people. And like you said, and with the amount of hours they're working, what they're doing, they're probably not sitting there watching CNN on their off time if they make enough to have a television. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. My co-host, Mark Levine, and I, Leslie Marshall, are co-hosting Inside Scoop every Tuesday, hour two, right here on The Leslie Marshall Show. Join us by following us on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall or at Mark Levine. When we come back, we'll share some of your tweets. We'll hear Mark's and my response to that right after this here on The Inside Scoop every Tuesday, hour two. Don't go away. Hey there, America. I'm Leslie Marshall, my co-host Mark Levine. This is Hour 2 on Tuesday, and we bring you the Inside Scoop. Mark Levine also hosts the Inside Scoop, as well as the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. And you see him on television on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, and CNBC. Mark, my co-host in this hour, let's share some tweets and things like that. Did you have any at Mark Levine that you wanted to share regarding this topic in this hour? At Mark Levine Talk.
At Mark Levine Talk. Yeah, I just want to let people know it's at Mark Levine Talk. At Mark Levine was taken. So at MarkLevineTalk.
Which I said the first time, so I'm sorry. I have it auto on my setting. So
No problem. No, go ahead. Show your tweets, Leslie. Go right ahead.
Well, my computer has been being bad, so I think we take a call. Let's go to Andy in New York City. Andy, thank you for joining us. Question or comment for Mark Levine or myself, Leslie Marshall, here on the Inside Scoop this hour.
Oh, hey. I just had a basic comment about the whole voting rights thing.
Yeah.
Basically, I think Americans care more about an episode of So You Think You Can Dance anyway.
Really?
To me, it doesn't really make a difference. Meanwhile, in Turkey, people are ready to protest over the plans to destroy a park. I just think Americans just get too complacent and just rely on party politics anyway.
Well, I think it's actually a pretty valid point, unfortunately. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I think maybe white Americans are complacent, but I don't know too many African Americans who are complacent about this. The Voting Rights Act of 1965, along with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, are the greatest civil rights achievements since the Civil War, since Lincoln freed the slaves in 1865. I don't know too many blacks that don't take that extremely seriously and aren't, frankly, despondent at the idea that racism and Jim Crow can rear its ugly head again. So that may well be true for many white Americans.
I agree to an extent. As an African American, I can say that maybe previous generations cared a lot more than we do right now. I believe that. I think there's an idea that that can't happen again. So I think that there's this lack of knowledge that history has a tendency of repeating itself. So we just rely on, let's say, an Obama or anybody to just take care of all our problems for us, rather than just actively taking a part in what's happening in our everyday lives.
Maybe so. I think that the beauty of the Voting Rights Act is that it actually got used less and less over time. In 1976, there were 64 objections, including 30 in Texas alone. There were 10 objections last year, which was, of course, an election year. There was only one this year. So the point is, things are getting better, but that's exactly because of the Voting Rights Act. In fact, the Voting Rights Act said, and this is very important, that if you go 10 years without trying to produce racist voting, you get off the list. So the fact that it's there actually protects us, and the fact that it's not used as often is a good sign, but that doesn't mean you get rid of the protection. Just because we have seatbelts and they help prevent accidents, it doesn't mean that you suddenly say, all right, well, you know, seatbelts have worked for many years, now let's just get rid of the seatbelts, we're fine. No, it still helps prevent racist voting laws in the future.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%. I believe that it should still be in place. I'm just saying that I think that citizens should take a more active role in responding to this, rather than
sitting
on Twitter and just being on Facebook and hashtagging something, contact the congressman. Doesn't happen.
Well, Congress could reauthorize this. The Supreme Court has said Congress can basically choose a new list. But in doing so, the whole thing is kind of tongue-in-cheek, because Congress, as Jacqueline pointed out, did in 2006 reauthorize this. They had tens of thousands of pages of testimony, dozens of hearings, and they said that these problems still exist. It's true that Congress could put up for a new list, but tried to get that through a Republican House and a filibuster in the Senate. Good luck.
Anything else, Andy?
I'm sorry?
I said, did you go ahead, continue.
Oh, no, I guess I just, I have a friend of mine who's from Turkey, so I guess I was just watching a lot of the things that were happening over there, and whereas I wouldn't want that level of violence, a lot of it was just reminiscent of what has happened to people in my family or people in other African-American families, but just that spirit of this is not going to stand, and we want to be public and just make that statement is just something that I would love to see return. I just often think that it won't happen.
All right.
I agree with you. I think people need to stand up and to fight back until, you know, if they passed it unanimously last time, let's pass it yet again. Let's tell the Supreme Court that Americans don't want racial discrimination in voting, period.
I agree. Jimmy tweets a couple of things. And he said, Middle American says, you have to look back to see why this law was implemented back in the 60s. I want you to address that, because there's actually somebody else that tweeted something very similar. Let me find where that was, because we had a lot of them since that. And where is he?
Well, let me say this while you're looking it up, Leslie. You know, people often talk about the great Martin Luther King and the March on Washington and the march across the Edward Pettus Bridge in Shelby, Alabama. And those are indeed the hallmarks of the civil rights movement. But those in and of themselves did nothing except, they brought Americans to consciousness about the problem, which, of course, was very important. But in terms of the law, they did nothing. The law that changed was the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That's what made Martin Luther King and all the civil rights workers, their work permanent. And the fact that this is being undone today, I think Martin Luther King would roll in his grave. I really do.
Clarence asks, and he appears to be African-American by his Twitter picture, does this not open the door for a broader piece of legislation to prevent discrimination at the polls in 50 states, not just 16?
Well, it does. Actually, that's a good point. So the Supreme Court said that it's unfair to treat the states differently. It's unfair to say that the racist states have to go through special preclearance and the non-racist states don't. There is an easy answer, which is to make everyone go through preclearance. You know, I don't know if all 50 states would agree to that. And frankly, I don't know that it's necessary in the states that have no history of racial discrimination. But I'd prefer that than what we have today, which is states that repeatedly try to discriminate being allowed to do exactly that. And that's the thing that's so harmful about all of this. Again, 10 years with no racist record, and you were off the list, and these states stayed on the list. That tells you something.
Black Flan says it's outdated, needs updating. Hugh Campbell says he's in favor of the ruling. As they said, this is 50 years later, and society has changed. Obviously, Supreme Court spoke to that. What do you say about that? About, like you said, you know, 10 years later. Is it basically decided because we have a black president, it's 2013, society has changed? Racism's alive and well in America.
Look, I agree we are not as racist as we were in the 1960s, but to me that's not the standard. The standard is equal protection under the law. The standard is the 14th Amendment. So we are way better than we are in the 60s and 70s. Okay, great. Pat ourselves on the back. Racism is not over. Specifically, racial voting practices by states are not over. I mentioned all the ones that were tried just last year with regard to the photo ID law. The answer is this kind of thing prevents racist voting practices, and I don't know why anyone could be opposed to that unless you think, well, blacks vote for the Democrats and we want to ensure a Republican electorate. But that, to me, even if you want that, that's not a valid reason to oppose this. It's unconstitutional.
Big Al in Chicago says we need a tool to stop Black Panthers from intimidating at voting.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've gone on Fox, you have as well, Leslie, you more than I, where they had one guy in Pennsylvania who apparently was large and black and carried a nightstick. And what did they do? They took his nightstick away. And then he came back in this majority black neighborhood and suddenly, well, he's intimidating. You know what? I don't know that if a white guy, was watching the polls all day, they would call that intimidating. I happen to think it's because he's black. I think that's frankly ridiculous. You know, there's no allegation the guy ever tried to stop anyone from voting. He was large. He was black. He wore a beret. You know, if you find that intimidating, maybe there's a problem with you. I don't think it's a problem with that guy.
Yeah, large black man must be up to no good, right?
Exactly.
Mark Levine, my co-host in this hour of The Inside Scoop, I think it was a great breaking of our virginity as co-host in this hour, although you and I definitely have played first, second, and third base as talk show hosts together. And I'm so glad that, you know, we're doing this every Tuesday, hour two, The Inside Scoop with me, Leslie Marshall, and Mark Levine. Follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk. And Mark is the host of The Inside Scoop and The Ruckus Caucus. Check it out, marklevinetalk.com, and follow him at Mark Levine Talk on Twitter. I'm Leslie Marshall, Hour 3 straight ahead.
Keep Leslie in your pocket. Go to leslimarshallshow.com/members.